irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razza Riffs with Keith Razza and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.
All right. Welcome to the show. I'm here with Alan Lee, my trusty sidekick.
And our guest,
the legendary Bobby Slayton.
Yeah, wow. We're excited.
You know, you should really throw in comedian Bobby Slayton because not really many people know who I am. You know, I've done a lot of podcasts. You know what the greatest thing about doing this podcast is? I know I'm serious. I know you think I'm going to slam you guys.
Don't worry.
But it's right down the street from my house. And for people who live in L.A. or have been to L.A., I mean, a lot of cities are like this, but to have anything close by you in Los Angeles is an amazing thing. You know, I grew up in New York. I mean, you know, sometimes you have to go take the subway to Brooklyn, but you always had things in the neighborhood. Here, there's no neighborhood. There's no walking because I live up in the hills. So just to come down the street. But here's the best part. So Keith, you know, I was going to talk about this. You opened up for me at the, was it the Brea Improv?
Brea Improv.
You hounded me to do the show. I said, I'd be happy to do it. But then I said to you, where are we doing the show? Is it because, you know, I don't want to drive to Santa Monica. You know, I don't want to, you know, that's the thing. The only friends I really have are the ones that live in the Valley. And I get friends who live in Santa Monica. Well, how can we never get together? Because it's such a bitch to drive around the city. And I travel all the time. So when you said to me, we actually taped the show right in Sherman Oaks. I go, where? And you go right up Ventura Boulevard. I go, right down the street from my house. And then you send me the address. And I'm very anal about this. And I never get, you know, I always get places early. And even though it's right down the street from my house, I was there 20 minutes early, and I look at this deserted building, and I said, I know this is like a half-ass radio show, a half-ass station, but it can't be like all, it looks more like a hideout where like terrorists are, like, okay, if they rob a bank from the Superman TV show, they would hang out with the curtains are drawn and they're broken Venetian blinds. I said, this really looks like a crappy place. And then I call you and I go, can you let me in? You know, and not only did you have the address wrong, you had the street wrong. Now, how did that happen? Tell me how that happened.
Okay, here's the thing.
It's better be good.
Okay. When the show first started, before LA Talk Radio, it was on Ventura Boulevard. Mm-hmm. So when I gave you the address, they didn't update it on the site.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I just realized it was that. So was it ever in that building, 14242?
Yeah. It used to be there.
Many years ago.
Wow. And then when you called me, I was like, did I give you that address? And I looked at the emails, and I was like, I did. And I felt like
it. Yeah. I hope you felt terrible.
I felt horrible. Good.
Are there any good restaurants down there? You stop and hit a little something.
But you know what? Coming over, I was running late because of you. And I said, well, maybe I'll just make them sweat out and walk in
two minutes
before, you know, taping time. But I couldn't do it to you because I'm a professional.
That's sweet.
All right. Are we done?
You're a legend.
Why is he talking?
Because I talk over everywhere.
This is great. You know. All right. Well, I'm ready to start the little podcast radio show, LA Talk, whatever.
Radio.
Yeah, LA Talk Radio. Is this on just in LA?
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
Yeah,
it is.
It's all over LA.
It helps my fan base in LA.
It goes to Santa Monica.
Wait a second, Keith. You also said to me, you want to be on my podcast. You call this a podcast. It's not a podcast.
It is a podcast because when it comes out, I put it on a podcast.
Oh, so it's actually playing all over the place.
Yeah.
So your imaginary listeners all over the world can hear this, not just your imaginary listeners in Los Angeles, everywhere.
No, exactly.
Cool.
See, but I don't know, when I asked you to do the podcast, you said, I'll only do it if you were funny.
I never said that.
Yeah, at the show, and then after...
Oh, if you were funny at the club.
Yeah.
And you were funny.
Yeah, and it was funny. And remember that guest set that they put on?
I'm trying to remember. You know, I play so many clubs. You know, the thing is, there's probably we have a guest set tonight, and I don't mind giving somebody a few minutes. You know, I said the only time I don't like a guest set is like Friday, Saturday night, when we have two shows because, you know, they got to clear the first show. That's just it. And then the late show, people are tired. People are so stupid, and they're young, and they're drunk. And I don't want the show to be extended any longer than it has to be and taken away from guys like us who are on the bill. But at the same time, if somebody wants to do 5-10 minutes, but I'm trying to remember, was guy really bad?
He was really bad, and you were like stressing out. And then after a show, he asked you how you did, and because he was a waiter there.
No, wait
a
second. Wait. I do remember, of course. Oh, no, of course I remember. Yeah, no, but you're the one that gave him crap. No, I didn't. I didn't give him. I remember busting his chops a little, but you know what? That's what comics do. Yeah. It's almost like, you know, rookie ball players when they cut their shoelaces and, you know, and they kind of initiation. But he was. You know, he had a, well, I don't know. I don't really remember, but I remember him not being great.
Yeah, and then he said, he's like, so do you think I was good? And then you said, I think you're a great waiter.
I don't remember. But I heard you were busting his chops afterwards. He had no right being up there. And somebody said, weren't you giving him a lot of shit or something?
Me? No. No. He asked me. He was like, how do you think I did? I said, whatever.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think you shouldn't ask for a guest set if you're not polished to do a guest set. You know what I mean?
Well, was it the last night? Was it a Sunday night? Or?
Yeah, it was the last night.
You know, it's fine. It doesn't. I got bigger things to worry about. Some guy wants to do 5 minutes. And,
yeah.
You know,
but I just
it does make the show. You know, people do go to a professional comedy show, and then it's not open mic night.
Yeah.
So they should really do it for just. Guys who are either professional or want to be professional, or you know, or you.
Yeah. What?
You're included.
No, yeah. But the cool thing about Bobby is, and Bobby, I told you this, but you're my grandfather was.
Oh.
You're my favorite. You were his favorite, you know, stand up. And before he died, we saw you in Vegas. And so it was a real. You know,
I didn't kill him. My performance.
No.
Right before he died, he saw you, and next thing you know,
boom,
boom, goodbye, Grandpa.
No, but no, Pop.
That's great.
Pop loved you and stuff, and then like
Las Vegas.
Yeah, and then he was like, "Oh, I would love to see you open up for him," and it really hurt because it's like he never got to saw that. But then it was like a dream accomplished in me that I got to open up for it.
Yeah, well, you know, I wish I had dreams that little. All my dreams would be realized. I have such big dreams. Maybe I shouldn't shoot so high. If this is one of your dreams, that's cool. I'm glad I could help out.
Yeah.
Well, no. Wait, was it you? Oh, my God. I think it was, because I never saw a posting like this on Facebook. Is it you that said... You don't love your grandmother anymore? You hate your grandmother? Was that you? Something to that effect?
I didn't say I don't love her anymore, but yeah.
You unfriended your grandmother.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my grandmother unfriended me, yes.
Unfriended you. First of all, I don't know. Maybe just because I'm old. Maybe because my grandparents are dead. But I just couldn't imagine if my grandparents were alive. Or even my parents are alive. My mother's alive. Just being on Facebook. But your grandma is unfriended. Why would she unfriend you?
I think just because, like, I make a lot of grandma jokes and...
Did you give her wrong directions, too, someplace?
Oh, that could have been. That
happened. Grandma, why don't you meet me? I'll take you out for lunch. And then you give her the wrong street, the wrong address, and poor grandma. And you know
state.
She doesn't have Google Maps or Waze, so grandma was probably screwed.
That's bad.
Now, what did she unfriended you?
That's probably what I did. I'm actually happy she unfriended me because she used to like every single status and then, like, post, like, cute things.
It must have hurt.
Yeah, and I was like, Yeah.
Why did she unfriend you?
Honestly, I just think she unfriended me because she saw my stand-up and I don't talk about her in a bright way. Like, I make jokes about her.
Right.
Like a joke I have is, like, I was playing games with my grandma. We were playing paper, rock, scissors, but she thought we were playing paper, rock, seizures.
Oh, nice.
Oh.
And she just...
I'm going to unfriend you now.
Yeah, that's me.
No, what? No. Don't unfriend me. But no, so... I get very sensitive when people unfriend me with my, like, Asperger's. I think I take it personal or something.
You do take a lot of things personal. But, you know, I take things personally, too.
We all do.
You know, the thing with the Facebook and the Facebook is that I never realized they cut you off at 5,000 friends. So I would just friend everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And then there were a couple of people, comics and actors, who I go, well, they want... And then I couldn't add them on, so I had to start deleting, you know, the teenage girls from Thailand and the, you know, the sheep herder from India. And with no vowels in his name. Who are these?
Exactly.
What's that?
I'm just saying, I've had the same experience.
Nobody's talking to you. he's like a retarded Paul Schaefer.
Oh.
Without a piano.
Here we go. I knew it.
Knew what? What did you know?
I knew he was going to start up on me.
I'm not starting up on you. I just don't see why you're here.
I love it.
Alan's here because I can't drive at
That's
night.
That's right. See, I have to drive.
Oh, I knew there was a reason.
So he can't find the address. He can't find the address.
Oh, and okay. I can't find the address.
Yeah. Well, at least you had the right address.
I did.
Okay.
So, Bobby,
why don't they let you drive at night?
I just don't drive at night because what it is like I don't see light that good. So, like, when stop signs and, you know, red, green, blue. I just have a hard time seeing light.
Are you Chinese?
No. Okay. I'm Caucasian.
Okay.
And but you know, with my Asperger's, I'm very sensitive to the light, so I don't see.
Oh, that's right. I think you told me that.
Yeah. When I opened up for you, my girlfriend at the time actually.
She's gone already? That wasn't that long ago. We were.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I thought you were still with her.
No. It's short story. Whatever. Anyways, changing the subject, I posted on Twitter questions for Bobby Slayton. And so you want to hear questions from the Twitter feed?
I can't wait.
You can't wait?
I can't imagine reading this Twitter feed and what they have to say. There's no good can come with this. But okay, sure, of course. We have 45 minutes to kill. What else am I going to do?
Well, no,
talking to retarded Paul Schaefer over here? I mean, whatever you want to
Hi,
do.
Hi, Bobby.
What? Okay. Bobby, when did you start doing stand-up comedy? Do you remember your first time on stage?
Oh, my God. These are the kind of questions that we'd have to get. Yeah, of course. I think every... That's like saying, do you remember... I even think a guy like Mick Jagger probably remembers the first woman he had sex with. I mean, the first time, you know, you're doing stand-up, it's a major thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, tell us about it.
It was... Pretty, I have it on, you know, I actually have it on tape. It was 38 years ago, and I have it on a little, I have it on a cassette. Remember, you ever hear those things?
Yeah.
They came right after 8-tracks. We had these cassette things back in the, I would go to Best Buy in my covered wagon and buy, stock up on them. But, yeah, I remember the first time I did stand-up. I went, there was a club in San Francisco called the Holy City Zoo, and they did comedy. They did professional comedy on Sunday nights and open mic night on Tuesday. And the other nights, it was a really small club. It was literally, I think, 70 or 80 seats max. It's so small. And, oh, my God, maybe not even that big. So, but you know what? When you're first time on stage, when it's a full room with 70 people, that really is a big crowd.
Yeah.
You know, when you've never been on stage before outside of fourth grade, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which I killed, by the way. Opened and closed in one day. But we, so anyway, I was at a party and somebody said to me, you know, I was always telling jokes or something. I mean, I never did stand-up, but somebody said, you should do stand-up. There's a place called the Holy City Zoo. And you should, I was a bike messenger downtown. I was 21 years old. And so I go on Sunday night to hear the so-called professional comedians. Mm-hmm. And they weren't really very good. I mean, I didn't really watch that much. It was packed. And I'm watching, I could do this. And the guy booking the club, Tony DePaul, said, you want to go on tonight? I said, no, I was going to sign up for Tuesday. Next Tuesday. I mean, you know, 9 days from now. Because I've never done stand-up. I didn't have any routines. It's not like I did in the college Rathskeller or my fraternity or, you know. It was like Billy Crystal performing at all my parents' parties. So I said, I got to put something together. But he was going to put me on the professional comedy night. And I found out months later that was a big opportunity because, you know... You know, all these guys had these little power trips where, you know, they would never put you, you know, you're an amateur, so you got to go on Tuesday. And even if you got there early to sign up, they put you on the whim of the guy, you know, Tony booking it. So anyway, I spent 9 days riding around like a mental patient on my little bike delivering stuff in downtown San Francisco, putting together 5 minutes. And I got up on stage and I signed up second. And I thought he was going to put me on second and he didn't. But I just jumped on stage and took the mic from him. And after he's kind of pissed, he goes, hey, man, you can't just jump on stage. I go, well, I was number two. He goes, well, I just put you on whatever I feel like putting you on. But I jumped up there, and I did my little set. And for a guy that never did stand-up and didn't have – like a guy like you, I'm not saying it's easy for you. Yeah. But you have so many comics you can watch now. There's so many comedians. You know, in a way, it makes it tougher because everything's been done. All the styles have been done, all the jokes, or a lot of them. But – you know, comics now, you have this template where you can just turn on Netflix or Comedy Central or, you know, anything. You can see, you know, The Tonight Show, and you can see how stand-up's done. When I was doing it, there weren't that many comics. You know, you'd see, you know, George Carlin or some of the old guys on The Tonight Show or Ed Sullivan or Merv Griffin. And so I didn't really see that much comedy. So you kind of had to forge your own way, you know, back then. Because you'd have all these role models and guys that people always said, hey, who do you want to be like? And I go, I never really watched that much comedy. And then somebody said, well, you're like a young Lenny Bruce. And I had heard of Lenny Bruce, but I never knew who he was, which is a shame.
We were just commenting on how you look like Lenny Bruce. There's a young shot of you on Google. It's amazing.
Why are you whispering like it's a...
Because that's...
Like
that's
why you feel like...
That's, like that's my, like that's late, my radio like voice. I like to talk like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Scaring me.
It's a voiceover over a voiceover.
Yeah. Okay. Can't you wait in the car and keep it running before Keith's done? He's your driver, right?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
No. So, yeah, but Lenny Bruce, you know, no, but I here's the funny thing. So I had a couple of jokes in my act like over the next few months. And then I started reading about Lenny Bruce and listening to him, and he had done a couple of the jokes, obviously before I did. And I said, well, you know, that's kind of cool that I'm thinking the same lines of a guy like Lenny Bruce. I mean, I wasn't really as good, but at least I knew I was kind of sort of pointed in the right direction and headed in the right direction. And so I always fancied myself like this cutting edge, even though I look back at the crap now and it wasn't really very cutting edge, you know. But, you know, compared to what a lot of the guys were doing in San Francisco back then, you know, impressions and, you know, I guess some of it was kind of, you know, a little bit more biting than, you know, when people would get pissed, I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
So it was, I kind of went that route. And now, you see where it got me on your dumb podcast. You see, after 40 years, look where I've wound up.
No. I appreciate you doing this podcast.
I know. I'm happy to be here.
Do you remember if you killed that night?
Or? Well, I have the tape. Yeah. You know, young comedians used to ask me for advice all the time, and I was in no position to give anybody advice, but I used to say, you should really tape yourself. And I used to record myself all the time. Yeah. And then, you know, I'd drive back from the Irvine Improv back to L.A., you know, an hour drive, and I'd put the cassette in, and a lot of times I thought the set went okay, and it went a lot better than I thought. And then sometimes I thought I killed, and it didn't go quite as well as I thought. And then sometimes... You know, that joke didn't work, and I realized how I was talking too fast. And so one of the best things to do is tape yourself. And then I found, even better than audio recording yourself, is to videotape yourself. Because I'd look at myself, and I'd be hunched over on stage, and, you know, you have these little mannerisms that, you know, are very self-conscious, and you don't realize you're doing them.
Yeah.
I mean, you videotape yourself, and then you realize, God, that's really stupid, and why'd I wear that shirt, or my belly's sticking out, or I shouldn't grab the mic that way, or, you know, you learn, if you can be subjective and objective about watching yourself, which is tough to do. But yeah. I was always very critical of my stuff. And, you know, I mean, there were nights where I would do 45 minutes an hour and kill, but I go, okay, well, these are jokes that I've done a million times. I didn't try anything new. I didn't go out on a limb.
Yeah.
I've done, you know, so a lot of times, but getting back to what you said about, did I kill? No, I didn't kill. Yeah. But for a new guy, for his first time on stage, with pretty dumb material, I did what well.
Yeah.
You know, and audiences back then, audiences now, you go to a comedy club, you know, it's, I think, a little bit easier because people are there to laugh. You know, the open mic, they're there to laugh, but people weren't really trained. People didn't know how to act, you know. I mean, people still do that. Oh, it was an heckler, I was part of the show, and he wanted me to yell at him. People are still idiots.
Yeah.
They'll never change.
I think, I don't do open mics. I mean, I haven't done open mics in, like, 7 years, but I remember when I did them, no one laughed. And then when you do comedy shows, people, like, are there to laugh.
Yeah, it's tough. Well, you know... The other thing, though, is I used to open up for a lot of rock and roll bands in San Francisco, and sometimes you weren't even billed. You know, there's comedians that have done bits about it, Albert Brooks and Billy Crystal. There's a lot of guys, I mean, a lot of comics cut their teeth opening for bands, and that can be the toughest but the most rewarding, because when people are not there to see you, they don't even know you're on the bill. You know, they're there to see whoever, Tom Jones or...
You opened up for Tom Jones?
No, I didn't. No. I, you know... My act was never clean enough to play all the, you know, a lot of my friends would open up for Diana Ross and maybe Frank Sinatra and, you know, the Fifth Dimension and all these middle of the road, but really good, you know, big drawing Vegas acts. My act was always too blue or dirty, or I don't even like to call it blue or dirty, but it wasn't Vegas mainstream. So I opened up for rock bands. And I was some Motown band, Four Tops and Ray Charles, Tower Power. I mean, a lot of bands, Warren Zevon, a lot of bands, and you know, when I was a younger comic, it was tough.
Yeah. Those crowds for a band, how'd you deal with those?
Yeah, because I've never opened up for a band.
It was tough. It was really tough. But, like I said, when you did well, in a way, it was a lot more rewarding than doing well in a comedy club, because people are not there to laugh, and they're not there to see you. You know, I remember there was one time in Tahoe, Yeah, I mean, you know, you always wanted to be on the bill. And most of the time I was. But July 4th weekend, back in the 80s, I was opening up for Eddie Money when Eddie was, like, at the top of his game. So I get up to Caesar's Tahoe, and it's hard enough opening for a rock band. But my name is not on the marquee.
Yeah.
And I call up the entertainment director. He goes, well, you know, the marquee people, you know, the union people, they've already left. And we can't get your name up there. So it was going to be tough enough opening for doing this show. And, you know, you get a rowdy, you know, people are, you know, hanging out and skiing all day, whatever they're doing now, stoned out of their minds. And the lights come down, and the big roar goes up. And then they go, please welcome comedian Bobby Slayton. And, you know, a few people clap because I was from the Bay Area. I started, and Lake Tahoe was not far away. So, you know, maybe a quarter of the audience knew who I was. And maybe half of them wanted to see me. So that was always a challenge. And that's why I always started talking so fast. Because, you know, it was like, get them before they get you. It was like, kill or be killed.
Yeah. That's very... And see, that's the thing, like, why I admire your stand-up so much. Because you're so old school comedy, you know. And not a lot of guys do, you know, what you do. Just go up real fast and just...
No, they don't.
Yeah.
No, they don't.
And so, Don Rickles, you call him the... Don Rickles of comedy, the pit bull of comedy.
Are you falling asleep as you're
talking? Yeah, I am.
You
I
feel like you're about to nod off.
I am falling asleep.
As you said,
I am. I've had a hard day.
You have a thought. You have a thought, but you can't just take the sentence to fruition. It's like, you know, Don Rickles. You have to grab on that last word.
Here's my Don Rickles laugh for you. Is that better?
That was great. That was great. Just doing a whole hour of him doing impressions. You should have interviewed me as Don Rickles. Nobody would have known.
That was the second question I actually got Twitter. Bobby, where did the nickname the Pitbull of Comedy come from?
God, I get that so much.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
We don't need to answer that. I was just reading.
Well, you know, first of all, I should really drop that whole thing because I'm just so tired of it. But then... you know, the comedy clubs keep advertising. You know, it was years ago, my friend Alex Bennett, who had a really cutting-edge radio show in San Francisco, he was way before Howard Stern. As a matter of fact, Howard Stern used to talk about growing up and listening to Alex Bennett when he was a kid on Long Island. And Alex, you know, he was something else in the 60s and 70s. He advocating, you know, all kinds of, you know, legalization of marijuana, which was really not, you know, that was, and you have John Lennon, Yoko Ono on the show, and the Black Panthers, and it was a real radical, you know, left wing kind of liberal kind of, you know, it was a really cool show. So Alex went to San Francisco, and I, you know, grew up in New York, I went to San Francisco. When I found out he was doing radio there, I went in to see him, and I was the guy that, I mean, it would have happened anyway, but morning radio, there's so many morning radio stations. You know, here in L.A., Kevin and Bean and Heidi and Frank and, you know, Man Cow in Chicago and, Keith, you know, Stern. I mean, there's every city's got 20 radio shows where they do comics on the morning show. And I'm not saying Alex and I were the first ones, but it was on a regular basis when I went to see Alex, because you know any other comedians. And I brought in Dana Carvey and Kevin Pollak, and eventually we got Robin Williams to come in. And... a lot of guys, and they would be part of the show, and it became a whole big morning thing. There were all these San Francisco comics, Stephen Pearl, and oh my God, there were so many guys. Some aren't even around anymore. But anyway, so Alex, I'm on the show one morning, and I get to do a joke about McDonald's, and every comic had a joke about McDonald's, and you know, it was McDonald's and airlines, and it wasn't really that bad. I didn't even remember what the joke was, but the advertising executive from the station came running in and goes, you know, you just lost us a $50,000 account. And Alex goes, you know, you're like a pit bull. This is when pit bulls was first getting in the news. You know, they're eating the heads off the children when the babysitters weren't looking and they're attacking the mailman. And so Alex goes, we put you on the radio, you're like a pit bull. You bite the hand that feeds you. And he just started calling me the pit bull of comedy, or hey, pit bull. And that kind of stuck. And the first time I did a TV show, I gave me the improv or something. You know, they said, what's your introduction? And I just called me the pit bull of comedy, I guess. And so it just kind of stuck. And now I'm kind of burdened with it.
But you're burdened with it, but I mean, that's like...
You still awake?
I'm wide awake.
But no, but like, that's like your... Because that's like your thing. Because like, when I saw you, you know, when people heckled you, you just went so fast off on them. Like, you know, you turned around... what they're going to say offline. I mean, it was hysterical.
Well, I don't always do that. I mean, I try. I mean, you know, I really, like to do my act. You know, I don't really want to. I don't. You know, Don Rickles, you know, was one of the first, and still, you know, he's still one of the greatest. And he was one of those guys, you know, with Frank Sinatra and Elvis Presley, you know, going after people. And he, I mean, other comics, I'm sure, did it, but he made an art form of it, and that's his act.
Yeah.
And even if, you know, well, I think it was the Tonight Show, Johnny Carson. When you know, he calls Rickles on the carpet, Rickles, you know, the black guy back there. And Johnny goes, I don't see a black guy. There's no black guy back there. You know, because there's always some part of me. Because
yeah.
I've seen Rickles live. And if, you know, the Japanese guy up front goes, hoo-doo, and there's the Japanese guy up front. So, you know, Rickles makes an art of just making fun of people even if they're not there. Because that's his whole shtick. But I would really, for the most part, rather do my show. And a lot of times, I just start talking to people. And I don't mean to. If I'm talking about marriage, hey, you two married? What, are you guys gay? And then do my gay stuff. And I kind of want to bring the audience in. And sometimes they really think that now they're part of the show and they just start talking back to me, which is my fault for talking to them in the first place. But there are shows that I do where I do an hour and 45 minutes of it. It's talking to the audience and doing the material and intertwining it, and it works out great. It's nice to know I just have the material to fall back on, but I've had people come to my show and sit up front, and they get really pissed. Well, we're not here to be part of your show. And then I have people thinking I'm going to be like Rickles, who come to my show and want to be picked on. And they're like, man, we came to your show, and you didn't pick on us at all. And you know, it's like it's damned if I do, damned if I don't. You know, there's some comedy clubs who put up signs when I play. You know, Bobby Slane is one of our favorite comics, although we recommend If You Faint at Heart, his material might not be suitable for, you know. And then people go, there was nothing. You know, they see the sign and they come in expecting, God, this guy's going to be dirty and blue and outrageous. And I'm really not.
Yeah.
And then, but they do it, the comedy clubs do it, so when people do get upset, well, we had the sign.
Yeah.
You know.
That's smart.
Yeah. But they said that really brings in more people, you know, than scares people away.
Yeah.
You know.
Did they have the sign at Brea? I don't think they did.
I don't think they want to Brea, but most of the improvs used to.
Yeah.
You know, Comedy Magic Club used to, and a few clubs. Funny Bones sometimes put something like that. You know, it's like the ride thing at Disneyland. If you have high blood pressure or bad back, you might want to attend a different ride or something. You know?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Now, which one do you enjoy playing more, casinos or comedy clubs?
I don't enjoy playing anywhere. I just...
You don't?
I would stay home for the rest of my life. Oh. You know, I don't play that many casinos. But, you know, it depends. Because, you know, if you play in a big theater, I mean, the thing is that I never got to the point where, like, Ray Romano or Jay Leno or Louis Black, I go to Vegas and very often I'll play a comedy club or I'll do a weekend out at the South Point or the Orleans. You know, they're smaller casinos and they're great. I would much rather play a showroom than a comedy club. Because, you know, when you play in a showroom, if you play in a casino in Vegas, you know, people have a lot of choices in that town. If they're coming to see you, I mean, they could have got free tickets. They might be in the hotel. But the fact that, I mean, because I was in Vegas for a long time, and I was at Hooters, at Tropicana. Yeah.
That's where I saw you at, is Hooters.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's a whole other story. I don't really want to get into that one. But now I play the South Point once or twice a year. And it's great because it's Bobby Slane and friends that I bring, you know, a couple other comedians, and people are there to see comedy. You go to a comedy club, I mean, they're there to see comedy, but a lot of them, you know, it's a different dynamic in a comedy club.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not as monitored as well. Maybe they're not as expensive as the casinos. People pay, you know, $30-$40 for a ticket. I think they tend to pay attention more, although that's not always true.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I've never performed at a casino, so I don't know.
Yeah.
You want to take me to South Point?
No.
Oh, excellent.
Well, no, but if that was one of your dreams, but it wasn't. Your dream was opening for me. You need to have bigger dreams. I told you that at the beginning of the broadcast.
Oh, my new dream is a tour with you.
Yeah. A lot of guys want to do that. Not as pretty as it sounds.
Ah.
All right, more dumb questions from your imaginary listeners. What else you got?
No. This one says, Bobby, which movie do you like better, Candy Shack or Ghostbusters?
Which movie do I like better? Yeah. Caddyshack or Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
What does that have to do with me?
I don't know. This is just a Twitter question.
Well, let me think about that, because I haven't seen it either before. I love both of those. I love Caddyshack, and I love Ghostbusters. They were both really good. Neither of them were Weekend at Bernie's, but...
Weekend at Bernie's was hysterical.
Was it? Oh. I'm not sure I ever made it through it. And Weekend at Bernie's 2 came. You know, I was in some hotel room a couple of months ago, and you know, there weren't a lot of channel options, and there wasn't a lot going on. And American Movie Classics, Weekend at Bernie's 2, and I started watching it. I go, you know, I didn't really get what was going on because I didn't see the first Weekend at Bernie's. It's like, I think it's a trilogy, isn't it? I like both those movies. I think Caddyshack maybe
Rodney
more.
Was in there. Rodney. Rodney Dangerfield.
Huh?
Rodney Dangerfield.
Sounds like he's whispering answers to you.
Nobody... I'm just agreeing with him. Like,
yeah. Rodney Dangerfield, yes, he was in that. Yes.
I thought it'd bring that up.
Yeah.
Bobby,
I hope he's a better driver than he is an interview guy.
Oh, he's a great driver. He's actually a sideshow.
Wait, quiet for a second. These great soundproof studios. People, I think my ride's here. Can you hear that? You can actually hear the sirens in these beautiful LA talk radio soundproof booths. It's great.
Bobby, the...
good headphones, too.
I know. Well, somebody, like, turned these on so loud. Anyways... Okay. And my glasses are falling off. I have a question. Do you enjoy acting more than stand-up?
No.
No?
I hate acting.
Yeah, I kind of figured that.
I hate it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I wish I had more acting jobs only because you feel like you're in show business.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing, the Jukebox Comedy Club in Peoria. You can be more removed from show biz except for doing your show. you're in a movie, and it's funny. I actually tweeted this last night. It was last night.
I retweeted it.
Oh, you did retweet it?
Bandits and Dream Girls.
Somebody called me up and goes, you know, I've only done like 10 movies, and somebody said, Dream Girls and Bandits are on right now. And I tweeted that. I go, you know, two of my movies, big residual checks. And then somebody... You know, email me or Facebook me. Get Shorty was another movie I've had, the one scene. That was on yesterday also. All three of my big hits were on. Small parts, but they were big hits.
Wait, Ed Wood was a big hit?
Ed Wood was a great movie, but it wasn't a big hit. It didn't make any money.
Really?
Mainstream America didn't go for that. No, they didn't make any money at all.
Well,
Bandits made no money. Great movie. That happened to come out like a week after 9/11, but it was so... I mean, Billy Bob Thornton, Cate Blanchett, and Bruce Willis... The three stars, an unknown January Jones, you know, who's in Mad Men, and then me. And now Jane Fonda's kid, he was great, Troy Garrity. But that was a really funny movie. I saw it like last week, and it never went anywhere, Bandits. You'd be surprised how many people never heard of it.
Yeah, I heard of it because I love Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, and he was great to work with. He was a lot of fun. But that movie, never went anywhere. And Ed Wood was so cool.
That surprises me. Ed Wood didn't make any money.
You know why? Because the movie, the American public, you know, all these idiots go see, they went to see the movie because, you know, Johnny Depp is in it. But Johnny Depp was playing this quirky, oddball Ed Wood.
Yeah.
This over-the-top, you know, lunatic. And I don't think that people really got it. I know that my mother and friends of mine from high school, you know, we haven't seen the movie. It's terrible. It was great. You know, Martin Landau won Academy Award, Best Actor, for playing, Lugosi. It was great.
I loved it.
Well, you get stuff like that. You're that kind of guy, you know. But you go to Comic-Con and all that, right?
I do go to Comic-Con.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
I do interviews at Comic-Con.
I figured that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I just figured you were a Comic-Con. You know, you're probably too young to be in the Kiss Army, though, right?
Yeah, okay. I'm a little too young for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what was it like working with Tim Burton? Was that cool?
Yeah. I only worked on the movie for 3 or 4 days, and he was... could not have been cooler. It was almost like, you know, the scenes I was in, they were kind of ad-libbed. You know, there was one with Criswell, you know, the gay psychic that, and Bela Lugosi, and I kind of ad-libbed the scene. There were lines, and he told me I could make stuff up, so he really didn't give me much direction.
Yeah.
I didn't really do much in that movie. I was literally, in Ed Wood, I was in one scene. It was actually two. They cut it down to one. But it's funny that, my God, that's why I don't like doing movies. I mean, that was a great experience, but standing around for 4 days to be in a movie for literally a minute and a half, that movie got me on the Academy Awards because when Martin Landau was nominated, they showed a clip from the movie, and they showed me in the background. He was talking to Johnny Depp, and I'm on stage as Slick Slumopovich, Seeker of Adventure. And you know. So I was on the Academy Awards thanks to the movie. Well, that's, for an eighth of a second.
Well, I mean, that's still something to be huge about, right?
It's one of my dreams, I guess. That was a dream, be on the Academy Awards. So I guess I did reach a dream.
Yeah, yeah. And then
are you laughing or sleeping?
No, I'm snoring. I wanted to see Somewhere Over the Rainbow, but you won't give me a chance.
Oh.
I have a question.
Okay.
A big question for Bobby.
All right.
You played Joey Bishop in a movie made for TV.
Yes.
The Rat Pack.
Right.
You have no comment on that.
No comment?
Yeah, I want to comment.
Oh, you want to comment on it? Oh, you want to comment?
No, Joey Bishop. It's amazing. I'm so impressed with
that. No comment.
You know, you'd be surprised how many people don't even remember who Joey Bishop is. That's why it's so hard playing comedy clubs now because, you know, it's you get kids that don't know who the Beatles are, can't name them. And I always hate people who go, before my time. Well, you know what? World War II was before my time, and so was Thomas Edison, and so was Al Jolson, and so was
George Washington.
There's a lot of things. Barely, yeah. And, I mean, I know who these people are, and I know what they've done, and I know. But yeah. People just use this. You know, popular culture today, so it's awful. I mean, there's some good stuff out there, some great stuff. There always will be, but, you know, people got to know the roots of music, and they got to know the roots of, you know, television and Hollywood, and they're just so stupid. And that's why I'm glad 30 years from now that there'll be no more world.
You can't do Ed Sullivan impressions today.
I think Rich Little probably still does one. But, you couldn't do that. Couldn't even do a Johnny Carson one. You'd be surprised how many kids don't know who Johnny Carson is.
Yeah, that's true.
But, doing that Rat Pack movie was pretty cool. That was really great. You know, because to work with Ray Liotta playing Sinatra, his birthday was the other night, and, you know, Joe Mantegna playing Dean Martin, you know, and the great Don Cheadle playing Sammy, and me being Joey Bishop was really kind of like the real Joey Bishop, because Joey was a talented guy, but he's just a nightclub comic. You know, he wasn't one of the showbiz heads on Mount Rushmore like those three guys. So here I am working with three major Hollywood actors. So in a way, I kind of was like the Joey Bishop, like Tito Jackson. I was part of the family, but totally dispensable.
Nice.
Yeah.
Who played Peter Lawford?
What's his name? Peter was great. Angus McFadden, a Scottish actor, who he was great. He was really good.
Now, did you do any research, like playing him?
Or? Yeah, I did a lot of research. Yeah, it was great. I did.
No, I didn't know whether to take that seriously or not.
Huh?
What? Because you didn't like acting.
But here's the thing with Joey Bishop. So it took me forever to get the part. I had to go and read three or four times. And first they thought I was too old. I was 42. Joey Bishop was 42. Ray Liotta was playing the part. He was 42. And Frank Sinatra at the time was 42. Mm-hmm. Give or take a year. I think we were all about 42. And I looked the same age as Ray Liotta, you know, same height as Ray Liotta, maybe a little bit shorter, and which was perfect, you know. And I'm going, but why? Why do I look too old? And then I dyed my hair so I looked younger, and they kept bringing in all these other actors. And finally I got it. So I said, I had only done about 10 movies, and every part I've ever done has been a fast-talking New York Jew. That's Joey Bishop, although he's from Philly. I was basically playing the same part. But I never played a real person before. So I have these visions of De Niro as Raging Bull and Meryl Streep learning how to play the cello and speak German or whatever the hell these method actors do. So I go to the Museum of Broadcasting where they have it's an amazing place in Beverly Hills. We got one in New York too. It's great. And so I pack a little snack and I sneak it in and I say to my wife, go to the Museum of Broadcasting. I got my notebook. I'm going to watch Joey Bishop. I'm going to watch the Joey Bishop show. And he had a talk show and a sitcom. And I'm going to sit, watch him for hours and study him. And literally, after 10 minutes, I go, well, I got it. Because he was just like me. You know, he talked a little like Jackie Mason, you know, like the odd dog. It's me, Joey, Frank, hey, Sammy, hey, Dean.
I wish the people out there could see this. I wish they could see it right here.
Oh,
Joey Bishop.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you. Is this one of your dreams to see me do Joey Bishop?
Yes. No, I wanted to play
Regis. I met both of you guys. I'm making your dreams come true today. I'm so happy I could help especially during the holiday season.
Now, Bobby, we have another Twitter question.
Where are you getting these Twitter questions from?
That's a good question.
From Twitter, my fan base.
Oh.
Yeah. Do you want to know who's tweeting this? or
I don't care.
All right.
If you want to tell me, I mean, sure, if you make the person happy. Okay. What do you keep coughing in the microphone for?
What the fuck's wrong with you? I'm sorry. You made me laugh so much.
You can cough in the other direction. You just go right into the microphone. And then people think it's me. They go, Bobby Slayton's got Ebola. What's wrong with Slayton? Why is he coughing so much?
It's me. I'm coughing. I want everyone out there to know it was me.
Here's a question for Bobby. Bobby, do you write down your material or do you just say it on stage or both? And this is
both.
From Ron Dude.
Ron Dude?
Yeah, Ron Dude. I just retweeted it, so you know you could. Can I say?
No, I believe you. You don't have to show me. Of course I write it down. I have notes in my pocket. It's my little security blanket. I've never gone on stage without notes in my pocket. Rarely do I take them out. But, you know, sometimes, you know, right before I go on, I look at a few new things I want to try, and I always have them in my pocket. But I always write it. No, I mean, I ad-lib a lot of stuff, and I make up stuff, and some stuff is, you know, maybe happened that day or is going on and make it up as I go along, but I have a base, a core of material that, you know, I don't always get to most of it, but I like to know I have it written down in case my mind goes blank.
Now, I have a question. You've been doing stand-up for a long time.
Long time.
Yeah, and you're one of the best. How much material do you have? Is it like 24 hours?
Not as much as you would think.
Really?
No, you look at guys like Bill Burr and Louis C.K. who write a new hour every half an hour. Those guys are just always writing. I mean, I have three CDs. So right there
are three hours. Okay. But you have a special. Born to be Bobby.
Yeah, and that's a lot of that stuff. You know, people are complaining because they say, well, a lot of this stuff is old material from all his CDs. But I'd never done a one-hour special, so I wanted to do the best of, you know. So I took a lot of that stuff, plus some new stuff. But that was 4 or 5 years ago already. So, I mean, if I did every bit I had, which I could never remember, you know, an hour of it's probably obsolete by now. You know, it's been done by other people, not the same, not the people took it from me, but, you know, the premises have been done to death. I haven't really looked back at a lot of the stuff, and, you know, but I if I had to stay on stage and I had my notes and I slow down, I mean, I could probably do 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, that's cool.
I wouldn't want to.
Oh, you wouldn't want to?
No. Oh. I mean, guys like Dave Chappelle and Carlos Mencia, doing 2 hour shows, what the hell are you doing? I mean, that's great. People are laughing and you want to be up there. I mean, I think once I did an almost two-hour show once. But I don't, you know, it's like leave them wanting more, you know, and the old showbiz saying.
Now, do you find, like, this is just my question because everyone loves Louis C.K. And I think he's a good writer, but I don't think he's a great stand-up.
Well, I haven't really watched him do that much stand-up. Yeah. From what I've seen, I've always loved him. And, you know, he did the Nasty Show in Montreal a few times with me, and he was spectacular. But I don't really watch comics for, like, an hour that often.
Yeah.
You know?
Because you're worried about your hour, right?
I think the great thing about Louis C.K. is that Louis just gets up, and I think a lot of times he's kind of just almost writing while he's up there. And it's not all going to hit.
Yeah.
You just keep doing that. You're going to get a lot of material. I love the guy, the fact that he's not afraid to take chances and just say what's on his mind. And from what I've seen of him, I love him. But then again, I haven't sat and watched that much stuff. I think also a lot of times people build up somebody so much, you know, and then when you finally see him, you go, oh, they're not that great. You hear so much about him, or you expect so much. And, you know, if somebody, Woody Allen, does a great movie, Andy Hall, and then the next one's not as good. Well, you know, or Billy Crystal hosts the Oscars. He was better last year. You know, when you're a perfect 10, and then you hit an 8 or a 9, you go, he's much better last year. Mm-hmm. You know, to rise to that level, you know, it's got to be difficult. I've never been up there, so I wouldn't know. I've never been in that rarefied air.
Do you ever do the Comedy Store?
No.
No?
No.
Why not?
Because when I started out, you know, in San Francisco, you know, from New York, I came down here, me, Dana Carvey, Kevin Pollak, a few other guys, and you kind of either played the Store or the Improv. There were a few guys like Leno and Seinfeld that played both, but I think Leno and Seinfeld, all these more New York, Boston, you know, monologists kind of started gravitating more to the improv, and the Comedy Store was more the California comics, the prop comics, and the women comics, and the, I mean, there was plenty of great comics. I mean, Pryor used to play there and all the time, but it was more, it was a different scene. And when I first came down from San Francisco, Mitzi Shore, who ran it, wouldn't really give me the time of day. And I often liked the vibe over there. And I went over to the improv, and Bud Freeman and Mark Lano, you know, both New York Jews, and, you know, they were both, you know, and all the comics that were playing there. It was mostly, you know, guys from New York, Mark Schiff and Larry Miller and Seinfeld and, you know, friends of mine and guys I liked. And so I played there. But now, when I'm in L.A., it was hard enough for me to come to the bottom of the hill to do your show. I don't want to go out and do show. You know, the second the show's over, I told my wife, you heard me right before we went on. I said, take the pizza dough out of the fridge, turn the oven on, you know.
Hit R, record.
Huh?
Hit R, record. I heard that.
You heard that?
I actually heard that.
Well, nobody knows what that means.
Hey, wait, you record a pizza?
I had to have a record the show for me.
Oh, right.
But I don't like to go out and do stand-up when I'm home. You know, on the rare occasion I get a TV show, you know, I'll go to the Comedy Magic Club or Laugh Factory and I'll try the 5 minutes out. But since I'm on the road so much, I can do that on the road. I don't need to when I'm home. Yeah. You know, in the old days, you go to the improv and casting people hung out there and, you know, the talent scouts for the Tonight Show. And nobody really does that anymore unless they're coming to see you. And nobody needs to come see you because, you know, you can just send them a tape or they can watch you on YouTube.
Yeah.
Or listen to you on LA Talk Radio.
On LA Talk Radio.
What's the name of the show anyway? You have a name for it?
Yeah, it's Razor Riffs.
Razor Riffs?
Yeah, like Razor because it's my last name, and Riffs because we're just talking. And yeah.
Oh, Razor. Razor. Oh, Razor Riffs.
Razor, yeah. Like a razor sharp.
This podcast, actually, like the reason why I do it is because it helps with my Asperger's. It helps me socialize more. So, like, that's why I enjoy
this
doing
this. This is therapy
podcast.
For both of us.
I'm not saying it's therapy. I'm just saying it helps me open up and talk to people.
That's really? I'm glad I can help.
You're making my dreams come true, Bobby. We should change your name from Pitbull
Bobby the
to,
Dream Maker.
Exactly.
Mother Teresa, yeah. Yeah.
You just take me on the road with you. I'll do the 5 minutes and be like, I made that kid's dreams come true.
Yeah.
Okay, we have one last Twitter question.
Thank God.
Why is Bobby looking at his watch?
I'm not looking at my watch. I'm actually looking at the reflection of the clock in the window.
You were yawning into the microphone.
I was.
Yeah. I get to cough, you get to yawn.
Okay, let's ask this question because we got it.
Wait, actually, I had two glasses of wine right before I came. I shouldn't have done that. Very unprofessional.
I had two. That's why I'm falling asleep. I had two.
Bobby's going to kill Alan Lee.
No.
Okay, here's the Twitter question.
I feel bad for him.
Okay.
I feel like I'm an Ed McMahon that he can't hear.
Okay, here's the question. Bobby, you had a cameo in Spade's Dickie Roberts. Did you stick around for the entire shoot or meet them, mingle with the cast?
No. Dickie Roberts, I forgot about that one.
That was written by Fred Wolf.
I love Fred. Yeah. And I love Fred.
You think he'll do the podcast?
You know what, Fred, I just saw him in the mall a few months ago, and he was working on something. He goes, yeah, I'll call you. I never heard from him. Him and Dana Carvey were working on something. Fred's great. I remember when Dickie Roberts, there was a big fight scene with, what's his name? Let's get ready to rumble. Was it Michael Buffer? Michael Buffer? And he was really a nice guy. We were sitting around talking for hours. That's why, you got to stand around for hours waiting in that makeup and somebody else's clothes. By dead people have worn. You know, shoes never fit properly. You know, every time they give me clothes, I always wanted to put on my own clothes. I never know. I sat there for like 20 minutes, talked to David Spade, and did my scene. And the second my scene was over, I got out of there. Yeah. I never hang out. Yeah. I just can't wait to get. I can't wait to get the makeup off me. I don't know how women wear makeup. It's so constricting and annoying. And as soon as I'm done, I can't wait to go home and crack open a bottle of wine because I feel I was in showbiz today. I did a movie. And I remember, I'm sorry if it was Dickie Roberts. I think it was Dickie Roberts. It might have been Dreamgirls. But it was one movie I did that we get invited to the premiere, and I'm sitting right in front of the director. And 20 minutes of the movie, I go, this really sucks. I can't leave. I can't leave because the director, I can't, this guy put me in the movie. I don't remember what movie it was. I don't think, Dickie Roberts was great. So was Dreamgirls. So it could have been those. But it was...
Ed Wood, maybe?
No, I loved Ed Wood. Yeah, Ed Wood, my part was so small, I didn't even get invited to the premiere. I got invited to the cast and crew, or the crew screening, like, you know,
yeah.
You know, the people who did craft services and, you know, drove around the celebrities, like Alan.
You know. Well, we're running out of time.
Oh, God. But running out of time is not as good as out of time, but no, we're heading in the right direction.
No, because the...
Running out is good. How much time do we have?
No, but do you have anything coming up that you want to promote? Like, were you this weekend or next weekend?
No, I'm home for 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
so where are we going in 2 weeks?
Oh, you really want to go on the road with me? Don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Do you have any guys who are lined up to do that? Robert Duchesne?
Yeah, I love Robert.
But you know what? The thing is, I don't make enough money to bring a guy on the road. All these comedy clubs I play, they hire their own acts.
You don't have to pay me. I'll drive us.
I'll drive around with you around the country?
Yeah.
Like, flying doesn't suck enough. I got to be in a car with you?
Oh, I'll pay for flying.
And then when it gets dark outside, I got to take over the driving. And it's fine. It's fine.
I'll pay for flying.
Wait, wait. Bobby, I'm here. I'm here for you.
I'll bring Alan. He could drive us.
I got 40 guys who want to work with me. I don't know why. Yeah, that would be great. A weekend with you, too.
All right.
Oh, my God.
He'll still crack open a bottle of wine after this.
Yeah, I'm
maybe hard. Two.
I'm on my way to go right now. Anyway, yeah, go to, if anybody is still awake or listening, BobbySlayton.com or Pitbull of Comedy on Twitter. Uh-huh. And that's all I have to plug. Nothing coming up.
We're going to get you followers because I'm gonna tell everyone to follow the great Bobby Slayton.
That'd be great. You know, I'm one of the few people that every time I tweet, I lose people. I'm going to be the first.
Me too.
No, but I'm going to have negative Twitter followers in about 6 months. People, how many Twitter followers? I'm going to have minus a few thousand. I don't know if anybody's ever pulled that off.
Yeah, why? Because I was on Razor Riffs.
No, I always lose people. I don't know why.
He doesn't need this to.
Oh, no, but Bobby did this for me. It was a huge favor, and I appreciate it, man.
A great cool. Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you, Bobby.
All right, guys, that's the end of the show. I'm Keith Reza, Alan Lee. Follow everyone, Bobby Slayton on
Bobby
Twitter.
Bobby Slayton was here.
Thank you.
All right, next week we have Craig Shoemaker, so we'll see you then.
You're listening to Reza Riffs with Keith Reza and Alan Lee. Right here on LA Talk Radio.